Hello, this is Greg Kelly, the Greg Kelly Podcast. I hope you caught wind of this. I don't care how you did, but thank you for joining us. And I guess I should plug my show on Newsmax. The Greg Kelly Reports program is 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and then it re-airs throughout the night. My guest here today is my dentist, who I met 10 years ago when I went to the dentist, like people go to the dentist. Lisa Ginsler offered me laughing gas, which made the experience quite pleasant, actually. And I'm surprised that laughing gas does not is not offered more to patients. But anyway, Lisa Ginsler and I, after she, and during, I guess, while I was her patient, we became lovers briefly, and then we became friends. Look, it should be acknowledged, Dr. Ginsler, that we were involved for a very short period of time, but I am glad that we remained friends, better friends than we were, whatever the heck we were back then. And how are you, Dr. Ginsler? Lisa, to everybody, hi.
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
Do you mind my acknowledging that? I think otherwise we'd be fake news. I mean, is it okay that I point that out? I could take it out if you want.
Yes, it is 100% okay. It's all out in the open.
Well, now it is. No, all right. So look, a couple of things. Lisa, where are you right now? Geographically?
Geographically, I'm in Chicago, but I am practicing in Florida.
You practice dentistry in Florida.
Yes.
So, and you grew up in Florida,
well,
right?
I haven't seen you in a long time.
I know. Well, I knew you were where you said you were, but just start at the beginning if you don't mind, or I'm going to start at the beginning. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Detroit, right outside Detroit, in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan.
And was your father a dentist?
My father is an orthodontist, and my brother is a root canal specialist. And so it sort of was a natural progression for me to get involved with it. My dad had great experiences with it. He loved it. He was a rare breed who knew what he wanted to do from age 9. And it was just, it was a happy, stable profession. So it was good.
All right. I want to tell everybody, we're not just going to talk about dentistry, of course. Well, I mean, but actually, for me, it is pretty interesting. So there'll be a lot of dentistry. We're going to go back to our situation there, Lisa. We'll go back to that just for a moment. And I do want to know about where you are now and what you're going through. And it's interesting, and it's a little touchy. So we'll get to that too. But your father being an orthodontist and your brother being a root canal specialist, and you're a dentist. Is there a prestige of a thing going on there? What's the difference between an orthodontist and a dentist? I know an orthodontist straightens your teeth, and a dentist does everything else.
An orthodontist is it's a specialty. You know, that's where you're straightening the teeth. But you know, I think the beauty of dentistry is you're kind of you wear a lot of hats. You know, so you're a therapist, you're a surgeon, you're an engineer, an artist, a doctor. So I think that if you have any artistic ability and you have any sort of science ability, it can be a very fun profession. It can be very diverse. So if you're a general dentist, you can do a little bit of everything. And if you're a specialist, then obviously you just do one thing. You know, my brother just does root canals, which isn't, you know, really fun for the patient, but I tend to think is generally a little bit more relaxing of a specialty for the actual endodontist. But
a root canal specialist is an what?
Endodontist.
Now, I mean, look, so you did this, your father was in the business and your brother, because for most people, even for you, you didn't like going to the dentist as a kid, or did you? I mean, maybe this is where you kind of went with your father to work, and it was a bit of a treat.
Well, you know, actually, I didn't, to be perfectly fair, I really didn't know what I was getting myself into, because I had not had a lot of procedures. And I, you know, I'd gone with my dad to work occasionally here and there, but it wasn't really something I entertained until I'd been out for a couple of years. So I graduated from college and I was a publishing editor for an investment internet company. And
where'd you go to college? Where'd you go to college?
I went to University of Michigan.
What'd you major in?
Best 4 years of my life. I was an English major and sort of pre-med, but I realized sort of after the fact that I was good with my hands. So I felt like that was just sort of a better fit for me.
Hold on. University of Michigan is actually a very prestigious school. At least I see it as one of the elite schools. If somebody says they went there, I'm like, huh, okay, that's something. That this person's probably, smart and also, great football and all that stuff. But wait, was it hard to get into? Is it easier if you live in Michigan?
I mean, I still did well on my, I still did really well in school and I did well on my board. So I think it may be a little bit easier, honestly, if you're in state. I think maybe you have a preference, but you still had to, be on the brighter side, I think. But yeah. I mean, it was the best 4 years of my life.
Why? Honestly. What was so good about college?
It was so much fun. I just, I think like anything, it's, the people you're surrounded with. And I was surrounded by just really intelligent, fun people. And, really, even to this day, it's great. I mean, you're living with your best friends. You're surrounded by people your own age. And, I actually really enjoyed the academic part. I was kind of nerdy. I mean, I loved being in those gorgeous, libraries studying with the sort of gothic, the gothic architecture. So, I mean, I loved it. I loved it. And to this day, they're some of my best friends.
Did you, how far is that from Detroit? How far is it from the suburbs of Detroit?
It was about 45 minutes.
Gee whiz, so you didn't go very far away.
I know.
Did you live it? Did you commute?
I did not. No, I mean, I lived there. But, it was nice. So it was like I was far enough away from home where I was completely in another world. But I was close enough that if I needed something or whatever, I could just kind of trek right back. So it was nice.
That's very close, by the way, 45 minutes.
It's a hop, skip, and a jump.
All right. So you had a great time in college and you leave, but you don't go right into, I know what you did. You said you found out after school that you were very good with your hands. How did you find that out?
I think a lot of dentists have some sort of artistic ability. At least a lot of the good cosmetic dentists, and I think just most good dentists are either drawing or painters, or they do something sort of on the side as a hobby. And I sort of always loved makeup artistry. And that I think was my sort of the beginning of my realizing that I was, had really good hand-eye coordination. And right now I sew and I do a lot of little sort of creative things, but it made a difference. And if you can kind of, pair that with a job, I mean, it doesn't really get any better than that. So it's great because it's not a traditional 9-to-5.
And
it's a very social job, and so it's fun.
There's got to be some way for the dental school to evaluate you've got to be good with your hands, as you mentioned. Does the school figure that out ahead of time? Do they give you some sort of
No.
They don't?
No. I mean, no. You kind of have to go in knowing that this is going to be something for you. Otherwise, you could be in for sort of a rude awakening. But, I mean, when they take, like for med school, there's the MCAT. For dental school, there's sort of the DAT, and there is sort of a spatial relations thing on it, but it's not, you kind of have to go into it. I think like anything, knowing what you're getting yourself into and, just sort of having an idea of what kinds of things the job actually entails, because it's not, even though you're a doctor of sorts, you're working with your hands all the time. So you have to have that sort of adeptness.
Where did you go to dental school?
I went to University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey, now Rutgers.
How long is that? How long does it take?
It's 4 years. And then I did a residency.
You don't hear about resident dentists like you do resident medical doctors for some reason. Am I wrong about that?
No, I mean, you don't, because it's not really, well, actually, in some states, I could be wrong, but I think now, like, if I think in New York state, I think you have to do a residency. I could be wrong on that. I think it's either you have to get, one of the ways you get licensed, I think, is just by virtue by doing the fact that you're doing a residency.
I guess,
but
I mean,
it helps you. It's a nice bridge. I mean, it's a nice bridge between private practice and dental school, because, you know, this way you have kind of a safety net.
Yeah, but I mean, in a hospital, they're always like, this is the resident, you know what I mean? Like, they almost identify themselves and they're with another doctor and, you know, one's monitoring.
Right.
Whereas, you know, I've been going to the dentist, I guess, for a long time, and I never remember like two dentists in the room, or one apprentice and one, you know, full-fledged
yeah.
dentist. I've never seen that. And I wonder why that is. Did you, when you're a resident, do you go in there with another doctor and like watch everything he or she does?
You can watch some of the things they do. It's generally either in a hospital setting or some sort of university setting. But I think that's why it's not really, you know, it's not like you go to your private practitioner and someone else is there. But it's usually in sort of a specialized setting.
All right. So you're in dental school, and are you like, all right, wow, this is what I should be doing. This is great. And yeah, that's my first question. Were you just totally turned on by dentistry?
No, for me, it was an adjustment, because I knew certain things about it, but I sort of dove in without knowing about crowns and implants and stuff like that. So,
and do you start on animals? You must.
No, you start right away you start on mannequins.
Mannequins.
So to be fair, You do learn, like, your first year, you're basically first year or two, you're literally working on these fake mouths. You're working on fake teeth and fake mannequins, and that's your gateway. And then you work on patients, and you even work on each other. I mean, you do injections on each other. I mean, the first injection you do is on one of your colleagues.
Injection, I guess, what, Novocaine or something like that?
Yep.
And
yep.
I'm surprised a little bit that you don't, you know, practice on cows or something like that.
No.
You've never heard
I mean,
of that?
They do that. You know, like if you're taking a course on implants or something like that, oral surgery, you know, a lot of dentists, you know, you take a lot of continuing education. You have to take a certain amount every few years. And you do work on cows and I think pigs, stuff like that. Yeah.
How hard was it, and like how many people either dropped out or failed out, or what percentage?
You know, we did actually have a couple of people drop out. I think we had, I definitely remember at least two, and it was so long ago, but I feel like there were, it might even have been up to like five or six or seven people. Some people had to repeat a year, but some people were like, this is absolutely not for me. I'm done.
That's tough. It is,
but you haven't invested so much at that point. So
you keep going, you plug along, and you graduate. And where is your first job? I mean, residency/job.
I had a couple sort of not so serious jobs, but you know, in New York State, there's a lot of Medicaid. And sometimes those places are good opportunities for volume. You just want to kind of get in.
And forgive me,
do as many procedures as you can.
One sec. Medicaid, I get this. I just want to make sure I understand, because Medicaid and Medicare, I get confused. Medicare
yes.
is for the elderly, and Medicaid is for low income, correct?
Yes. Medicare is only medical. It's not dental.
And Medicaid is for low income people. All right. So,
yeah.
And there's a lot of volume, a lot of work.
That's also a good place to start for someone who's just graduated, because you can do a lot of procedures. You know, you're not coming out of the gate and doing high end cosmetic dentistry on, you know, the upper echelons of, you know, patient base. So it takes a couple years to get comfortable with it. I don't think you come out of the gate really knowing, you know, you don't have the experience. So I think it takes a couple years of just getting in there and, you know, working in these jobs that just to get your feet wet. And then I had, I worked about 6.5 years on Wall Street. And then I worked about 2.5 years, on Park Avenue.
Wow. A prestigious, dental addresses. Now, back overall, I do remember as a kid going to the dentist. Actually, you know, before you went to the dentist, you brushed your teeth. It was like, and you didn't eat anything. We were very kind of fastidious about that. And I'm curious, and not to be gross here, but, you know, when people sit down and they open their mouth, I guess you give them the option to rinse, but, you know, are you kind of sometimes shocked about the condition in there? I'm not talking about their teeth, just like, you know, did some of them just have lunch? And
you never know. I mean, I always found it to be kind of interesting, you know, because nowadays people are so, you know, meticulous with, you know, they get Botox and they get filler and they're at the gym all the time and they're watching what they eat. And, you know, they'll open up their mouth and they haven't had their teeth cleaned in like 3 years. I mean, you see it all the time. I see it all the time.
And you know what? Everybody's drinking coffee right now. And seriously, is that like, does that hurt your teeth? Are my teeth not white, as white as they could be?
It's not so great. Well, it does stain them, but coffee is very acidic. So you don't want to kind of keep bathing your teeth in that because, you know, if it's acidic, it's going to cause a cavity-prone inducing environment. So, you kind of want to be careful about that.
Cavity prone.
Plus, people are putting sugar in it, so you got to be careful. Yeah.
So the one thing, look, about dentistry that I think would be, I mean, every day, from my perspective, it looks to be the same. But you just told me it's like an adventure. They open their mouth, and you never know what you're going to see. So the work is interesting.
Yes, the work is always interesting. It's always challenging. There's, you know, no two patients are the same. You know, and plus you have to remember you're not necessarily just treating their mouth, you're treating the patient as a whole. So you kind of have to figure out why they're getting these cavities, you know, or why they have gum disease, why are they losing bone? So you gotta, you know, it's important to always remember that so you can really tailor your treatment plans because you're not just fixing what's there. You want to prevent anything from getting worse.
Let me ask you this. You are a, and forgive me, but I think it's okay. You know, the Me Too era. I am kind of curious. Has a patient, male or female, ever done anything inappropriate? You know, you're in there and has anything, has a patient ever made you feel comfortable in that way?
Actually, I'm going to say yes. When I was in New York, I've seen it. I saw it a few times in New York. I saw it in Florida with my assistant. You know, there's a patient, he's kind of groping her on the side and we're both looking at each other and I don't know what's going on, and this is a longtime patient of hers. And I had a situation with a dentist that I worked for, on Wall Street. So it's definitely prevalent. It's definitely out there.
And that's, by the way, that's illegal.
It is. Of course it is. And, you know, as a woman, you know, it was hard for me, because I stayed at this one office, you know, for probably five and a half years after the incident. Because I loved the job and I loved the office and I didn't have to see my boss very often, but it definitely, in the end I had to leave that office because unfortunately he did make life difficult for me.
Oh, all right. I was actually referring to a patient doing that. And you mentioned the patient with the, your assistant.
The patient, it was easy to nip that in the bud with the patients, you know, either you just tell them, you know, point blank, listen, I can't have, you know, any relations with the patient outside of this, or you just, and I think you're sort of in a position of authority as the dentist, so you can nip that, a little bit easier than if you were, you know, than if it was your boss, but they have a little bit more control. But it does happen. It definitely happens.
Well, I mean, I didn't make a move at the office, obviously. Somehow we exchanged numbers, or I got your numbers, or I called the office. And I mean, how did I don't remember how that happened. Do you?
I do remember how it happened. And actually, what I do remember about it was, I never had TV. So I think I had worked in another office during the same time that I was working on Wall Street. And I remember they had a TV there. And I remember them saying, it was like early in the morning or whatever. And I said, oh my God, I have this patient. He's on TV. And we were watching you on TV. And I remember thinking, you were eating something. And I felt like either you were in pain or something. And I remember thinking, oh no, something's wrong. Because I think they called me from the office and they said, Dr. Ginsler, Greg Kelly, needs to talk to you. And I thought, oh no. He had problems with his tooth. It's going to be terrible. And then, you were like, no, it's just a social call.
Oh boy. That was, a dozen or so years ago. And that's what you had to do.
It was a million years ago.
You had to call people. I mean, nobody really was texting, back then yet, you know, hey, what's up?
No.
We had
2012 or something like that. 2011.
I think it was 2007. 2007. I think we should probably leave all the dates out. Okay. I'm pretty sure it was 7, but all right. And anyway, that didn't go well. It actually went in a beautiful direction. I mean, we became friends.
It did because we became good friends. So there you go.
So back then you were in New York, and let's face it, New York is a tough place to live for anybody. You can live in, I like to point out, when I lived in Pensacola, Florida, you know, it was like the easiest place in the world to live. For not much money, you could have a car and an apartment and a full life and do things and socialize and go on vacation every now and then. Whereas in New York, you know, survival is difficult. And also, by the way, dating is a mess here, as we both know.
It is.
So can you sum it up? Why did you leave New York?
I think I did get a bit of a 7-year itch. And I think New York is wonderful if you are either a multimillionaire or if you're in your 20s. And I think, I remember I changed jobs around then, and I got a new job at a wonderful office with wonderful mentors. But I had still sort of known that I was ready for a change. I think with New York, I think I started to know that I was ready for a change because I had to wear earplugs on the subway. And I was like, I think I need a car. I think I need a little more space, some more trees. At that point, I knew that it was time. It was time for something new.
Yeah. I mean, I know the area you lived in, Manhattan, and just it was a lot of stuff you had to put up with. And yeah, also the guys. And the guys aren't necessarily the greatest here. At least they're great guys, I'm sure. But in terms
there
of what...
There are great guys. I think I had sort of a different mentality there. You know, I think, and I don't know if I might have told you this, but I felt like there was very much a casual relationship city.
Yeah. And I don't think people understand how those casual relationships can be damaging to one or both of the parties long term. It didn't turn out that way with us, but it can, I wouldn't call it casual what, you know, you and I had, but I mean, it was just those things seem, I don't know, when you grow up, you learn some things and damage can be done.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you're both going into it knowing what it is, then the casual relationship can definitely serve its purpose. But I think you can only do that for so long before you want something a little more substantial.
I think everybody wants, don't you think everyone wants something like, you know, no one goes into a relationship, oh, casual is fine. In the back of at least one party's mind, they're thinking this could be more, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's a time and a place for those casual relationships, but I think ultimately you want something, no pun intended, you can sink your teeth into a little bit more.
You know, you grew up...
it's more fulfilling.
You're Jewish, right?
I am.
And I am Christian, but we have the Ten Commandments in the Old Testament, and they're mentioned, the rules of God, New Testament. And somebody told me this recently. Those rules are not made to confine you. They're not made to hold you back or keep you from having fun. They're actually there so you can live your best life, so you can really enjoy all that the world and all that God has in store for you. They're designed to protect you. And I think there's something really amazing about that. I've just been thinking about this. What do you think about that?
I do. And you've been getting more into that, right? I think in like the past few years.
Yes. I mean, I've been thinking about faith in a way that I never have before. And,
And you feel like it made a big difference for you?
It's everything.
Like on a daily basis, do you even feel like that?
Absolutely. I mean, on a moment-to-moment basis sometimes. It's the biggest shift in my life, and I don't wish for anything, quite frankly. I was going to say I wish it happened a long time ago, but whatever. You go through the things you go through, and I think God uses all of us for some purpose. But if we open ourselves up to Him and listen and, yes, obey... those rules, and those rules are designed to protect us and to help us, I think that life can be much greater than what it is for most of us. So, yes. All right. I am not a pastor or a preacher, but...
that's the new spiritual side of you talking.
Well, I don't want to say spiritual, quite frankly, because spiritual, you know, you hear that a lot. I'm not religious, I'm spiritual, you know, and I don't even know what that means. I
think it means something different for everybody.
I don't know if it should. And I mean, again, now I sound like I'm preaching, but you know, we do have the Bible. There is a way to live, and it's there. That minimizes it, but you know what, you know, transcendental meditation, right?
Yes.
What did you ever do it?
I think we talked about this previously, because I went in New York. I did the initial, you know, I think there was like they do one initial session, and I didn't continue with it. But that one session, I had a good experience with it.
Interesting.
And I kind of wish that I would have kept up on it. And I still actually every once in a while feel like I should revisit it, because I think that could be life-changing for a lot of people,
well,
even, and for me, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember now talking to you about it, and because I underwent that training, I got it for free, by the way, which I think does change it if they, whatever they charge, whether it's $2,000 or $4,000, I don't know.
Oh my God, is that what it is now?
No, I don't know, and I don't. It's at least $1,000.
I think it's at least $1,500. I mean, this was my God. This really could have been like 10 years ago, but it was definitely $1,500.
So I think I did an assignment for work, and that's why I was in there, and I got it for free, and I liked it, and I started doing it, which is. Basically, it's 20 minutes in the morning of meditation and 20 minutes in the afternoon.
And you still do it?
No. Well, I signed a pledge saying that I would not teach it, which I have no, you know, like that's one of the things. They want to keep it,
right.
You know, and that's fine.
Right.
I respect that. So,
right.
But I'll tell you this, I was falling asleep during it. I'd get up in the morning, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning to do it. And I would fall and I would fall asleep.
I think that's one of the dangers of it. But I
was doing it wrong.
Form of meditation.
Well, no, that's what I mean. It led to something more significant for me. So I was doing this, and yes, it was actually pleasant. But I was falling asleep, and I thought I actually like getting up early in the morning and doing something, even if it was that. But I didn't feel productive. So what I started to do. Was read the Bible instead. I'd get up and I'd read the Bible, and someone had given me a Bible. We all have Bibles probably in the house, but someone gave me this specific Bible, the Charles Stanley Life Principles Bible. Anyway, I started reading it first thing in the morning, and that really started a conversation, if you will, with God that I wasn't having, and I started to see things and understand things at a deeper level. And it was only when I went to the Word that those things started happening. And that's what I recommend. You know, this whole, you know, well, I'm spiritual, not religious. That's kind of where I was, spiritual, dabbling in meditation. You know, what the hell is that? And what, you know, like, it's somebody invented it. You know, it just, but this stuff, if you believe, this is the Word of God, and it's available to all of us. And if you, last thing on this, sorry. If you really, what I needed was not just a Bible that you get at, in the hotel, you know, when I've tried opening the Bible and, you know, I'm confused from the get-go. I'm sorry, but the language is often beyond me and it's very allegorical and I don't know what's going on. And so the Charles Stanley version has footnotes and little explainers and essays. And that's what I needed. And I still need it, by the way. And it's it just changed. Finally, I was having the conversation I think I was looking for. So, yeah.
But it's so interesting because now, and this is also after you got married.
No, this is before.
This is before. Oh, did I know that?
Yeah, this is before, several years before. Most definitely. Because I remember when I went through the meditation course. Yeah, definitely before. And yeah, I think he's in control of everything. He's in control of, and you can recognize that.
Do you think there's a plan? Do you think there's like a plan for people?
I do. I do. However, you can mess it up. we still have free, we do. We have free will and we can try to do things on our own So I do think there's a plan, and I think that he has it all figured out, and I don't understand
it. I haven't gone down that road. I haven't really explored it too much.
I think you should. I think you should, because there are all these little, you know, silly things out there that are, you know, new Netflix shows and all that stuff. And, but God is right here, right now, and available to all of us. And, why not? why not tap into what he wants to say to you? And I think it's available to all of us. It's so obvious, quite frankly, to me that should be our priority. And if you look at your life and you see all the little silly things, I'm not talking about you, Lisa, really, I'm not, you know, but the silly things that were in my life.
But you see things through a different lens now.
Yep. I don't know if that's an adequate way. For me, that's not adequate. I mean, different lens? Yeah, I guess you could say different lens. And I'm not saying I am, we're talking too much about me and not enough about you, but the dentist stuff, I would just say it changes everything. And one other thing I should say, you know, lately I hear people say like, well, you're a show off because you go to church, or you're a show off because you go to the Bible, or you think you're so good because you do that. That's a little vibe I've been picking up on. And not necessarily.
No. Well, people really say that?
Hear me out. Like, I've heard people say that about others. You know, they don't necessarily know where I'm coming from. I have heard disparaging comments about people of faith. We all have, actually. Go on Twitter. Go watch the debate that's unfolding in Washington about nominees and everything. And you know, you go not because you're perfect. You go because you're imperfect. You go because you need it.
True.
It's not for appearances. It's for nourishment.
It's for you.
It's for you, and it's for him, and it's for others. It's not for public consumption, although what the heck, I'm talking about it. What do I know? And you know what? Quite frankly.
Well, but you're also someone who's in the spotlight, and you know that you know enough to know that those outside comments are moot.
Well, I don't know. I mean, hey, that spotlight, we got to turn that spotlight up. Have you watched the show? And actually, we should spend a moment. You know, you and I are good friends, but you hate Donald Trump, and I think he's fantastic. I think he's fantastic.
I've seen your tweets. Oh, my God. Do you really want to go there?
Well, I don't mind with you. I mean, for instance, you're not angry at me. I mean, there, I've got other friends who are like, we need to have a talk. And they like, you know, just, all right, let's talk. Well, I'm not ready to do it right now. I'm not emotionally there yet. I mean, like, people are really freaked out about it. And you're one of my friends who's just kind of at ease with it all, which I appreciate, even though I know you can get fired up about him and his policies. And, you know, you're fierce.
Well, I feel strongly one way, and I think you feel strongly another. But, you know, I think we can hear each other without, you know, disparaging each other. You know, I can have a conversation about it. I'm not sure I'll ever agree with you on it. You know, like I say, you're driving the Trump train, and I'm happy to be run over by it. But
one thing I do remember debating with you, podcasts, by the way, you love these true crime podcasts. I actually like them, some of them. Well, I find them frustrating because, you know, they're always, oh, this man, you know, accused of killing someone in 1978 in Montana was innocent. And I'm not sure if they were always innocent, and there are two cases we could, you know, that I know they weren't, but you usually buy what they're pushing.
I think a lot of them are well done. And to be honest, a lot of those podcasts have made a difference for these cases, you know, like the Curtis Flowers one, the In the Dark season 2. I think that's the one that you didn't like. But they did ultimately take that to the Supreme Court, and Doug Evans did not continue to pursue it. And that man is now free and doesn't have to go for a seventh trial. You know, it's the same thing with that, you know, God. There was another one. I don't really know what happened to it. This was the Shrink Next Door. And I'm still waiting to hear what's happened with that. But there, a lot of these podcasts actually do some good in the world. They bring attention to these cases, and they're looked at by higher authorities, which I think is really interesting.
There's that. And some of them just waste our time, like that Serial one, which I listened to, and I will admit it was entertaining, and, you know, I was kind of getting into it. And then I realized, oh, wait a second, this guy did it. He's guilty.
He did do it.
He just told everybody. Yeah. How do you know? I know. How did you pick that up? He did it. We're talking about, what's his name?
I think I always knew he did it, because at no point did he ever say, my God, that's so awful. What happened to Hay? You know, like, he never... There was never any discussion about that. Like, if he cared for her at all, he would have been like, I think he would have been either surprised that this happened to her or that this had happened to her, but he never was. And I think all it would have taken was one comment like that, and I would have maybe had some doubt, but I never did have any doubt, because he never expressed any remorse. He just, you know.
Yeah. Somebody told me. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's it. I mean,
Do you remember, it was like, whatever, 12 or 13 episodes, and it was pitched as, oh, this guy, this is a real interesting case. And I was 7 episodes in, and we find out that, let's see, this guy was dating this girl. He calls her twice a day, every day, and then she's dead. He's the suspect. They don't arrest him right away. He's not the suspect right away. And he wasn't calling her. That was interesting. She's missing and everyone's looking for her. And then the person's like, so I noticed that, you know, she goes missing and you're looking for her. You're her friend, but you didn't call her ever again after such and such time and place. And he's like, is that a question? So it was like, oh gosh, they just jerked me around for 7 hours and he did it.
Yeah, and, but I also had some, I don't remember. I think he had some poor representation. I think something had happened to his lawyer. I think she passed away and some things weren't done quite right. But I think that was like the first, one of the first true crime podcasts, I think, of all of them. That was like one of the first ones.
Might be. You know, yeah, you're right. There are mistakes made in every case. I mean, the headline of, or the subtitle for all these podcasts could be that the system isn't perfect, which it's not.
Yes, that's very true.
Exactly. What are we going to do? I mean, can we come up with a better system? I don't think we can.
There was another one, To Live and Die in L.A., with that young actress, Adea Shabani. And I think, you know, the police didn't do what they were supposed to. And they ultimately figure, oh, maybe they did. You know. Maybe they did figure it out. But there are some of these podcasts where, like, they're figuring it out in real time.
Which is, back to you. Do you have malpractice insurance? Well, first of all,
I do.
You have that, right? Is it like a big, is it your number one expense?
It's a big expense. It's probably not my number one expense, but it's an expense.
And what have you ever... Oops.
No.
What is a mistake that dentists, what is the most common mistake dentists make?
That's a good question. I don't think that there's a question of mistakes because a lot of it is, I wouldn't say that dentists are necessarily prone to making mistakes, but I think that maybe something that everyone can do better, and I think I alluded to this before, is just treating the person as a whole. You know, even with everything that I'm going through, and I think that applies to not necessarily dentists, but all doctors. You know, like I'm going through something right now that I think a lot of people are treating it as like a, you know, not that it's sort of treating it as an isolated incident, but if you were to look at me as a whole human being, it sort of is a different picture. So
let's talk about what you're going through right now. You have been diagnosed with what?
Bladder cancer. This is my third cancer. And you know, what I do find to be so interesting about this is that, you know, so I had cancer in 2004 and then I had it again in 2015.
What kind, and by the way?
In 2004, it was breast and in 2015, it was uterine. And I did see a genetics counselor, but not a genetics doctor. And as someone who's young, having multiple cancers, you know, I'd wish that they had looked a little bit further and instead of just saying, okay, so we did the surgery, now you're fine, you're healthy, that's it. You know, I think it would have been helpful at that time to do, you know, to see a genetics doctor and sort of figure out why it's happening as opposed to just treating it sort of as it comes along. And I think, you know, it's like when you go to the dentist, you're not just necessarily worried about the cavity. You're worried about why they're getting cavities. You're not just worrying about, you know, why they have bone loss. Why are they still getting bone loss? You know, is it the medications that they're on that are causing their mouth to be dry and therefore causing them to have a lot of cavities? You know, like cardiologists, there are a lot of medications, not just with, you know, the heart, but all types of medications, there's dry mouth. And, you know, that's a really big problem for a lot of patients. But, you know, people are just so focused, I think, on treating one thing that, you know, they don't realize that it's connected to the rest of the body. So I think that's...
And you're concerned that your cancer this time around, they might have been focused on the wrong thing and it may have been missed.
Well, I actually feel very fortunate because I did further genetic testing for this one. And as it turns out, I do have a predisposition. And if I had known this in 2015, I would have been screened more carefully, you know, and then I wouldn't be in the position that I am now.
So you're in Chicago for treatment?
Mm-hmm.
What does that entail?
So I am having radiation, pelvic radiation, and chemotherapy. And then probably I'll end up having a surgery. And then hopefully, knock on wood, that's it. And I'll be, you know, healthy as a horse and good to go.
Gosh, that's very, very tough. And have you ever wondered, and I'm wondering right now, like, why you? Three cancers, you're, you know, that's just you.
No, well, now, I mean, you know, it's actually nice because now I have some answers with a genetic predisposition.
Like, why you? Why do you have that genetic predisposition? You ever wonder that?
It's just my DNA. There's nothing, you know, it's just a very rare predisposition. And
we were speaking about God earlier. Do you ever, I'm not talking, I understand the DNA, the predisposition, genetic, but like why did this happen to you?
No, I don't go there. To me, it's just, this is it. This is how it's going. And I am not going to ask why me and not, you know, so-and-so. This is just, for whatever strange reason, this is the journey of my life. Maybe it will become apparent to me further along in my journey, but right now it's just, this is what it is, and I'm just going to live life in a forward direction and be positive and hopeful, and I feel like that's the best I can do.
Bravo. Well, all right. You know, I hear about chemotherapy and radiation treatment. I don't know. I mean, what is that like on a day-to-day basis? What is your day like?
It's cumulative, so you get a little bit more and more tired, and it affects everybody differently. Usually, I mean, there are, you know, some GI issues. The radiation makes you tired. You get some heartburn. It's really a load. It's a load of fun. It's a lot of fun, but every day it's something different, but you know, you're on a day to day, almost even a minute to minute basis. But I'm lucky. I have good doctors, and they're managing everything. So I feel very fortunate.
And you commute to a facility? I mean, you're living at home, you're living with family, right?
I am fortunate enough that, so I was diagnosed, I was living in Florida, and now I'm at University of Chicago. Luckily enough, my uncle's a physician in Northern Chicago, and it was sort of between Sloan Kettering and University of Chicago, especially with coronavirus. I wasn't really ready to go to Sloan. So with my type of cancer, I needed to be sort of in a university setting, where there's like a whole group of physicians, radiologists and radiological oncologists, medical oncologists, gynecologists, urologists. And so I'm in this facility where I have like basically like a whole team of people that take care of me. So I'm lucky. So I'm here sort of temporarily.
But wait, I heard a dog in the background.
Yes, my dogs are here. Of course, I had to take my dogs there. They go.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Yes.
How long, I mean, are you able to, what can you do when you're not being treated? Watch TV, read? Is it full-time like this treatment almost?
It is full-time, and it is kind of all-consuming. So I'm not working right now.
Did someone take over the practice or what?
Yeah, I'm very lucky. It was like 10:30 on a Monday night when I realized that I wasn't going to be able to go back to my office, that I realized that I had to sort of make a beeline up to Chicago. And luckily enough, there was a dentist who, especially with coronavirus, she'd had less hours. So I called her up on Monday and she literally took over the practice on Tuesday. And so I'm very lucky. Yeah.
Awesome.
Worked out beautifully.
Awesome. And yeah. I'm sorry, what were you saying about, what are you doing up there?
I sleep a lot. I thought I was going to be a little bit more productive than I have been, but it's mostly, you know, I try to, you know, I'm trying to be outside, get a little bit of exercise, read a little bit. I'm usually asleep for about a good four hours in the middle of the day. And then at night, you know, I kind of hang out with my family and then I go to bed early. So it's not the most, especially with coronavirus, you really can't go anywhere. So, yeah, it's sort of a weird existence, but I think we're almost done with this part. So that's good.
And the doctors are confident, right? I mean, you're going to be okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And you might see me in the next couple of weeks because I'll probably be at Sloan. So you might find me on your doorstep.
Hey. Well, obviously anytime, you know that, but you know, something, well, I'm sorry, Lisa.
It's okay.
I don't know if you, of course you remember, I designed a whole TV show around you and people like you, but you were the star of it. I'm going to put a picture of this on the website, but it's a it's a coming talk show that I think is really special, and Lisa and some others made it really special, and folks, you'll see it someday.
I've seen parts of it. It's great.
Now, by the way, when you walked onto this, all right, so real quick background, I told Lisa that I had this idea that I wanted to interview her on a television show, and you just wanted to know what I was going to ask you, and you kept pestering me, and quite frankly, I just didn't know. I usually don't know ahead of time, and maybe I should, but so it seemed, I'm just guessing, it seemed a little bit like ad hoc and all, you know, kind of what the hell is he got planned in terms of this thing,
well,
right?
Well, you're used to being on TV, and I'm not used to being on TV, so, but I think it worked out.
You were terrific, and I'm just curious, and again, I'll put the picture up on the website. What did you think when you walked in and you saw all that stuff? I mean,
I thought it was exciting. I thought it was amazing, because I watched you also for a little bit before I went on. And I'd never been in a room like that before. I thought it was cool. I thought it was really cool.
Well, Lisa was terrific. And by the way, so she had a great time on this show. And then
I did
a few weeks later. And again, your interview was seen by a lot of important people. Very interesting. So they all liked you. So, but it was curious. You tell me a story, or I know you were saying like, are you going to do that show again? Because I've got the perfect guest. And I'm like, do you remember this conversation?
Yes. And oh, yes.
So don't tell me who the neighbor is yet. Okay. You're like, yeah, because then you say, and I remember thinking, oh, you know, because I just wasn't into it for whatever reason. You're like, my neighbor.
I know. You were like, what is she talking about now? What does this have to do with anything?
And you started to get into it, and like, my neighbor is, and I'm like, oh, gosh. And you know, and it's not even your neighbor. It's your neighbor's daughter, right?
Yes.
And I'm like, what, she won the ballet contest? What is it? and then finally, what your neighbor did what?
She's an astronaut. She made oh my God, was it 2018? I don't even know which year it was, but she's training. She's an astronaut trainee in Houston.
It's amazing. No, and when you said, you know, and she's an astronaut, and we looked her up, or I looked her up, Jasmine Moog-Belly, I think her name is, and it's wild.
Yeah.
There is a very good chance that she could walk on the moon someday. I mean,
and 50, you know, we 50. Were watching. I think it's going to happen. And I, you know, it's so funny because we were watching, did you see that new show with Hilary Swank? It's called Away, where they go to Mars.
No.
So we were just randomly watching this last night. And I was telling my aunt, I was like, oh my God, by the way, my neighbor's daughter is going to Mars. She was like, really? I was like, yes, for real. Like, it's really going to happen.
Your neighbor, by the way, it's not just like your neighbor in the same town. It's your next door neighbor.
Yes, and it's my next door neighbor. And they're so lovely. Yeah.
Their daughter is Jasmine Moog-Belly. And by the way, when I looked her up, I was actually also thrilled that she's from my hometown where I was born, Baldwin, New York.
That's right.
She grew up in Baldwin. She went to Baldwin High School, which is about a half mile from the house. I only lived there till second grade. Then we moved, but she graduated from Baldwin High School, went to MIT, became a Marine Corps officer and Cobra helicopter pilot. I was a Harrier pilot, a little bit faster, but hey. So she's incredibly impressive. And I guess the wild part is the show, as you know, was kind of about everyday people. Just, you know, you don't have to have a movie or anything like that to come on. And I found their stories to be more interesting, quite frankly, than somebody who was selling a movie. And
Everyone has a story. And what a random connection.
Well, totally. I mean, yes, random, but also beautiful, because that happens to be an obsession of mine, like the moon, and we should be back there, and that men have been there, 12 of them, and we haven't been back, but we could be going back soon. And the idea that your next door neighbor could be on her way sooner or later to the moon was just astounding to me. And
it's amazing. I met her once. She came in town, and it was like seeing a celebrity. It was like, oh my God, like, you're going to be on the moon one day.
That's a lot of pressure for her.
She knew this from, like, when she was a child. Her father was showing me pictures. She'd known her whole life that this was what she wanted.
There is a picture of her. She must be like maybe 8 or 9 years old, and she's wearing like a Halloween,
I think it's on the internet somewhere.
Yeah, it's Christmas time, and she's wearing like a spacesuit, like a kid's space. It's a little bit more than a Halloween costume. I think it might even be homemade, but it's so incredible. And I mean, I've dressed up in spacesuits as a kid and also as an adult, and to see that her as a child and her future. So it's really neat.
I think, what was it? It was like 19,000 people. There were like maybe 12 candidates chosen out of like 19,000 people. Like, it's some, I mean, yeah, it's very impressive. Very impressive.
No, it's, it's wild. They're incredible. So, and I wish I could go to the moon. I really do. If I were Mike Bloomberg rich, if I had like, he's like $60-70 billion or something like that, I think I would just, send myself to the moon. I really would.
Can you imagine? I mean, I can't even imagine. Listen, Elon Musk, I mean, who knows what's going to happen?
But
it could be in your future. You never know.
Do you think we could, if you had enough money, like, number one, we already know how to get to the moon. We do. We know it's possible. So if you just recreated what we did in 1969 and 1972, like, could you just do that again? I'm sure it could be done more efficiently, but I bet Mike Bloomberg or somebody like him, if they just wanted to go up there and come back, it could be done. And there's one guy going, who was that? The Japanese guy, who's throwing him up there?
Really?
I think it is Elon Musk. I don't think they're landing on the moon, but they've chosen someone, a civilian, who's just going to orbit the moon and come home, and that's going to happen in like 5 or 6 years. Which,
oh my God,
it's actually in a weird way.
You want to go all the way to the moon, orbit it, and come home. You want to go to the moon, step on the moon, feel it on the moon, and then you come home.
Well, I'd rather land on the moon, but I would be content with orbiting the moon, because I never realized what a major accomplishment that was until I read more about Apollo 8, 50th anniversary of Apollo 8. I mean, just what they did, that was really special. Landing on the moon was like icing on the cake, cherry on top, but yeah.
I mean, you think those footprints are still there?
They most certainly are.
Isn't that amazing?
That's
so crazy to me.
All right. What can
with virtual reality, one day they can sort of recreate that. Wouldn't that be cool?
You know, funny you should mention that. I was playing around with an iPad, and they had some sort of, you know, walk on the moon program. And even on my iPad, you got a real sense, I could envision a virtual reality program that would be like the next best thing. And I should point out that movie, what the hell was it called? First Man, about Neil Armstrong, which wasn't a fantastic movie, but by the time they get to the moon, there's something very authentic about the sequence when they're on the moon. And if you see it on a big screen, like I did twice, it scratches that itch in a way.
Is that the one? Who's starring in that one?
Ryan Gosling.
I don't.
Who is, let's face it, he's a.
I don't think I saw that one.
He is a bland actor. I don't understand what the big deal is about that guy. You know what I'm talking about, right?
I think he's a good actor. I remember him in, what was that movie, like Blue Valentine, I think it was. Like, I think he has range. I think he's a good actor. Maybe he wasn't perfect for that role, but I can't speak to it because I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either. And, all right. So, look, I mean, I saw the First Man movie, and he was way too, Neil Armstrong was not that moody, not that weird. And I don't know what the hell it was just not so much.
Interesting. Well, now I'm going to have to watch it.
Rel, what can I do? What can I do for you? What can anybody do for you? I mean, you're up there being treated. And seriously, is there something like people can do for you or people like you or, you know, kids who are being treated? Or what would you, is there anything that we can do?
No. I'm good. Just have well wishes. And honestly, I feel like my big take home is, if you or anybody you know has it, see a genetics doctor. I'm going to actually put that out there because I think that's important. Because I'm actually surprised that it's not sort of an automatic part of being treated. So I'm going to put that out there. Just request to see a genetics doctor.
Okay, that's good. So I've never heard of a genetics doctor.
I didn't either.
There is such a thing?
I don't think that there's that many of them, but I actually think especially that genetics are becoming like a really, you know, they're finding out new tests all the time. And a lot of, you know, a lot of people, like I wonder, like even like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, she had like, I think she had three cancers, I think, and she had maybe two bouts of remission. A couple recurrences. I'm not sure, but I wonder because it's not typical for, you know, someone to have multiple cancers or even have one. So, you know, I know that cancer is sort of elusive. You don't know if it's from a virus or if it's, you know, sort of just this weird isolated incident or if it's really your diet or whatever. But, I think that genetics are, I feel like that should almost be like a forefront of cancer treatment. That's my new take home message.
Yeah.
So,
hey, one thing, you mentioned RBG. You're Jewish. I've heard from my Jewish friends and relatives, they were like, what's going on with this? Not burying her for 7 days. I'm sorry. I am so sorry. But I mean,
the sitting Shiva?
Not the sitting Shiva, but apparently it's custom to, you can't even keep the body past sundown, let alone 7 or 6.
Well, I don't know. To be honest, I don't know what the laws are, honestly, with that, like the religious traditions are with that. I know. But there is something where you sit Shiva for, you know, a week afterwards.
Well, it's that, there's a burial, and then
sit Shiva. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
I think we'll cut that part out. All right. So wait, one more thing. It's terrific talking to you.
It's wonderful talking to you.
And we miss you down here.
I miss you, but you might see me in the next couple months, so it'll be good.
Well,
but I see you when you come down to Florida. With COVID times, it's crazy, but I got to meet the baby. I cannot wait to meet the baby.
Hey, you, one more thing. You're like a crazy hiker, right?
I'm a what?
Hiker. You like to hike.
Oh, I do love to hike. Yes.
But didn't you go to like some crazy country and hike a mountain or something?
I didn't really go to a crazy country, but I did some backpacking, which is really no joke.
Did you get those little hot things in your back, like those little hot spots in your back?
I didn't have like hot spots in my back, but like you have to carry, you know, everything that you're gonna need and use And I'm only like 95 pounds. So to carry a backpack that's 35 pounds and carry that, you know, 10 miles a day is, they are not joking around.
Yeah, don't do that anymore.
I know. I think I'm just going to go glamping from here on out.
Okay, Lisa, thank you very, very much. Really great talking
to you.
You
are so welcome.
And that is it for us today. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. I listen to a fair amount of podcasts. I've never subscribed to one of them. I don't know what that entails. But if you don't mind, if you know what that entails, by all means. Also, the Greg Kelly Report show is on every weeknight at 7 p.m. It re-airs during the night at various times. Check with your cable provider. It's findable. We're on like in 70 million homes. But you can also live stream us at newsmax.com. I'm on Twitter at Greg Kelly USA. And please check out the website. It's the Greg Kelly Podcast. And thank you very, very much. Thank you, Lisa, again.